Blue Wire.
Three on the way. Yes. Paul George nails it.
For the win.
Folks, and welcome to the B-Ball Index podcast. I am your host today, Cranges McBasketball, but you can call me Tim. Today's episode is brought to you through the Blue Wire Podcast Network from our sponsors Bet Online and Untuckit. And on today's pod, we're going to be going through a mailbag of seven key questions that'll help you know all of the fun facts, have you geared up for the playoffs, all ready to go, all relating to our data at B-Ball Index, but all on some pretty interesting topics. The first thing that we will cover, somebody asked about the top players in a couple talent grade areas. So we're going to look at, I picked out three, and this is using a new tool that we have over at the site that lets you see the top 15 or bottom 15 players in any of our 11 talent grades with any minute filter. I used a 1,000 minutes or more filter, but you can go lower if you wanted to. We should add in offensive roles. We should add in positions. But in its current state, you can already see a whole lot. And what we're going to do is I pick two leaderboards and one what we're calling a loser board. So first, we'll start off with our defensive rebounding leaderboard. So this isn't just defensive rebounds. We can count those pretty easily. This is trying to gauge how talented players are at obtaining defensive rebounds. This looks at things like boxing out and how your team does better or worse with you on the court from a rebounding standpoint. This looks at the percentage of your defensive rebounds that were contested versus just being given to you. This accounts for teammates deferring rebounds to others. So if you let Russell Westbrook run in and grab a rebound in front of you, that's not really going to count against you. This also looks at the rate at which when you are in a contested rebounding battle, how often are you getting that board? So those are some of the inputs. There's more into it than that, but that's a high-level look at what goes into this. When we look through our leaderboard, we've got some familiar names at the top. We have DeAndre Jordan. We have the board man himself, Kawhi Leonard, in at second. Clint Capella, third. And then Julius Randle, fourth. Bam Adebayo, fifth. Giannis at sixth. Domantas Sabonis at 7th, Trey Lyles 8th, Kristaps Porzingis 9th, Rudy Gobert 10th, AD 11th, Kat 12th, Jason Tatum 13th, LeBron 14th, and Joel Embiid 15th. And with these, along with everything else, I wouldn't get too worked up about one guy being one spot ahead of somebody else. There's a lot that goes into this, and this is our best estimate, trying to negate all kinds of team contextual factors. So this will give you, this is the top tier of guys, a lot of names that make sense to me. It's really nice to see Kawhi Leonard performing, the Apple Man himself up there in at second. Clint Capella makes sense, DeAndre Jordan makes sense, Bam Adebayo, Giannis, all those guys up there. So that's an example of a leaderboard. Now I'll give you a loser board. So this is the list of the bottom 15 players in our perimeter defense talent grade. And again, we're doing a 1,000 minutes or more for somebody to be on this list. We will start off from 15th. So we've got DeAndre Hunter, which has to be a disappointing grade for him. DeAndre Jordan next, Miles Bridges, Kristaps Porzingis, Ivica Zubac, makes a lot of sense as a Laker fan, former Laker player. LaMarcus Aldridge, Clint Capella, Kevin Love. Ooh, we've got Tobias Harris in here, Kevin Knox, Hassan Whiteside, Andrew Wiggins. That's a name that stands out. Kyle Kuzma, another one who has been a poor defender in his career, improved a little bit from year one to year two. This year, his defensive impact we've seen deteriorate as the season has gone along, and his perimeter defensive grade is fairly low. Then we have Kuzma. Then we have Tony Snell, and then dead last among those players who have played 1,000 minutes or more is Jonas Valanciunas. There are players who are lower overall in these grades, but we're just looking at guys who have played 1,000 minutes or more. So that's an interesting list. I'll give you one more. These are the top role gravity players. These are your roll men. These are your vertical lob threats, a lot of these guys. Picking and popping is another part of this, so that factors into here as well. Up at the top, Rudy Gobert, Jared Allen, Steven Adams, Hassan Whiteside, DeAndre Jordan. So DeAndre Jordan's been on, all three of these lists? Yeah, he's made all three lists. Bam Adebayo, we've seen that name. Valanciunas is on here. Mitchell Robinson, Dwight Powell, Montrezl Harrell, Daniel Tice, Rashawn Holmes, Ivica Zubac, Derek Favors, and Willie Cauley-Stein. So we have a couple names that appear list to list, but that's a look at what our new leaderboards look like. You can get these in our grades and tools document in our $5 per month data and tools package. So definitely check that out. That's a good way for me to plug a tool out of a question that we got. Let's look at next, seeing the top risers and also fallers in some of our talent grades. So we can start with perimeter shooting. I only picked out a couple, but we're going to go with perimeter shooting. These are the players who, from last season to this season, have seen the largest rise. So we're going to start off. This is a guy who had a D-plus average from 2013 to last season. Heading into this year, LaMarcus Aldridge, up from a D-plus to, I believe, now an A. So that is pretty impressive. And I was looking at his shot distribution, and I was wondering, hey, maybe he's just taking that one step back, and instead of taking all those long twos, he's taking threes. Nope, he's still taking plenty of long twos. His just shots from 3 to 10 feet and right next to the rim have gone down quite a bit. So he's become much more of a perimeter-oriented player, even more than he had been in the past. But it's neat to see yet another big man who had no real three-point shooting history, but has consistently hit those long twos, be able to take an extra step and hit some of those threes. Another guy, and this is a name that came up when we talked to Costa a couple weeks ago, Brandon Ingram, another big riser in our perimeter shooting talent grid. He has an A. He used to have a C-plus average from 20-whatever to 20-whatever. The years he's been in the league, he had been at a C-plus on average. Now he's up to an A, and that's a big part of his ascent this year. Rounding out the top five, you have Trey Lyles, Serge Ibaka, and George Hill. And then if we go to our bottom five players, these are the guys who have dropped the most year over year. Derrick Rose, Rudy Gay, Terrence Ferguson, DJ Augustine, and then dead last, Malcolm Brogdon. It is not good to lose your shot, and these are guys who have really seen a dip in their perimeter shooting from last season to this season. Next, we're going to talk about our one-on-one talent grid. So these are the guys that are, you know, isolation and being able to score in similar situations to that. So our top five risers, number one, Jason Tatum. This was a big area that last season was something that I had looked at and said, you know what, Tatum's playmaking and his one-on-one grades, they're not where you want them to be for him to go into some sort of superstar-like role. He may get to that point in the future, but it doesn't look like he's going to get there soon because he has such a poor grade. But this season, he's seen a big, big jump in his one-on-one grade. Another jump, Russell Westbrook, second place here. I think the spacing that he's had in Houston, at least recently, has been a big help to this. Another big jump, Steven Adams, which is an interesting name to see on the list. You don't usually see too many big guys take huge leaps, especially not guys like Steven Adams, who generally aren't iso-type guys. Then we have Avery Bradley, who has done well, and then also Colin Sexton, taking a big leap and a key player for Cleveland in their future. They need him to pan out, and his shooting and his one-on-one play and hopefully his passing next, really picking it up, are going to be critical for them moving forward. And if we look at the guys who have dropped the most in their one-on-one play, we have Serge Ibaka, someone getting older, LaMarcus Aldridge, another guy getting older, Kelly Olynyk, then Al Horford, another guy getting older, and then Rashawn Holmes, dead last in terms of the change year over year. And again, this is among players who have played 1,000 or more minutes. And I'll give you one more. We'll talk about perimeter defense and our top five players in terms of moving up. Jordan Clarkson, which is an interesting name. He's somebody that we had tweeted out a couple days ago about having a good perimeter defensive grade and surprised some people, but he has turned it around apparently from last year to this year, really picked it up there. Patty Mills, Doug McDermott, Chris Dunn, and Avery Bradley, the top five risers. Avery Bradley, a name that makes sense, somebody who's finally been a little bit more healthy and actually has had his share of injuries this year as well, but started the year pretty healthy, and we saw that in his perimeter defensive rating, and he's remained a key riser over the course of this year. When we look at the guys who have dropped the most, we have Kyle Kuzma, who popped up on our loser board. We have Paul George, who has battled injuries and really dropped off in a couple different areas, but hopefully will pick it back up the more he plays and the more he's healthy. Mike Conley, who's somebody that it doesn't take the numbers to see that he's lost it just a little bit this year, maybe a little bit more than a little bit, but somebody we love to root for, but has taken a real step back with his perimeter D this year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, not an encouraging sight for a young guard. You don't want to see them on this list. And then Steven Adams, who again pops up, has seen some swings this year from last year. So those are some of the top changers. The next question, who is the most talented team? And then can you do a couple head-to-heads for some of the top teams? So for right now, I'm going to only look at for the head-to-head, I want to look at the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Clippers. Those are some of our top title contenders. But if we look at just the most talented team in the database, we have Milwaukee. Clear, very, very clear favorite, very much in the lead in that regard. Some of the least talented teams, you have teams like Atlanta, Detroit, and even Brooklyn shows up on that least talented list. Now, if we look at some of the head-to-head, when we stack the Bucks up against the Lakers, of our 11 talent grades, the Bucks lead in 8 of those 11. Among the three that the Lakers do lead, they have a lead in perimeter defense where they rank 5th. I'm sorry, where they rank 4th compared to the Bucks being 5th, so pretty close there. They have a larger lead in finishing where the Lakers are 2nd and the Bucks are 11th. And then in our one-on-one talent grade, the Lakers are 18th and the Bucks are 19th. So two of the three that the Lakers lead the Bucks in, they're pretty close. And there may be some on the Bucks side in the Bucks' favor that are fairly close as well, but the Lakers don't have any clear, at least at a high-level team view of looking at things. And this is just looking at a weighted average of minutes. So as a team, the Lakers may not be too elite with their one-on-one play, but if you just look at some of their top players, they clearly have some good guys, as do the Bucks. But only one clear advantage at the team level for the Lakers, and that's in their finishing, which is, you know, the ability not just to finish at the rim, but the ability to get there as well. That's a critical thing. If we look at the Bucks versus the Clippers, so Bucks Lakers was Bucks 8, Lakers 3. Bucks versus Clippers, the Bucks lead 10-1, which is not nearly as close. The only talent grade the Clippers lead the Bucks is in their one-on-one grade, where they're 9th as a team compared to the Bucks being 19th. So not nearly as close there, not as many borderline ones. And then if we move to our last matchup, the Clippers versus the Lakers have a 7-4 lead here. So I think we see a clear Bucks first, Lakers second, Clippers third, from a talent standpoint on these rosters. And again, this is using a weighted average of minutes. So the Lakers lead 7-4. Among the ones that the Clippers do lead, they have a lead in perimeter shooting, where they rank 7th versus the Lakers being 18th. In off-ball movement, the Clippers are 8th and the Lakers are 11th. In one-on-one scoring, the Clippers are 9th. Clippers are 19th. Yeah, so the Lakers are ahead there. So it's actually 8-3. And then in playmaking, ranked 22nd versus 27th. So it looks like the Clippers, as a team talent standpoint overall, may be a little bit less talented than the Lakers, but it's all about what you can do with it, how your coaching is, making sure that you have the right people doing the right things. Because as a team, you can be mediocre at something, but if you have your 3 or 4 best guys at whatever it is doing it on high volume, then it doesn't look as bad in real life. So that's a quick look. This was just using our team summarized grades tab. And we also have tabs that look at the team summarized numbers for guards, wings and bigs if you want to see, oh, you know what, how do the Boston wings compare to the Miami wings at perimeter defense or one-on-one player, whatever. We have that. That's updating every time we update the grades. So we have that from wings, bigs, and guards, and then also at the team level. March has arrived, and we are only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. So make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest, starting March 15th. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all of your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. The next question, can you rise in rankings with the same core starting from the bottom and getting to the top? So the Cavs is the example that they list. I'd say yes and no. Young players are expected to rise the most based off of the just anticipated growth rates that we have for players. Young players tend to grow the most, and then you kind of slow down as you hit 25, 26, 27, and then you start declining, and then the older you get, the faster you decline. And that curve tends to look pretty similar no matter what the talent grade is. The point at which you go from being improving to getting a little bit worse is different for each talent grade, and it's different for whatever position you are. But that is the general idea, and in general, young players tend to improve the most. So in the sense that you have potential for growth, I would say that I would agree with that. Do you have the potential for growth to the point where you can go from bottom to top with the same group of guys? Probably not, because most likely your young core isn't, or I guess what I would say is if you're trying to keep, I don't know, 80% of the roster together and go from bottom to top, I would doubt that's going to happen. Because these top teams, they have role players that aren't homegrown that they brought in that are talented. And even some of these young teams like the Cavs or the Suns or whoever, they have some talented guys, but they have a lot of other guys around the roster who aren't the type of players that are taking those one-year deals with title contenders that are still pretty talented but getting older. So you won't have the benefit of those ancillary pieces, or maybe not even ancillary, but those older, less long-term pieces being in your benefit, to your benefit, I should say. You can still improve quite a bit, but there's probably going to be some roster turnover. Now, can the Suns go from having Ayton and Booker and everybody else to having Ayton and Booker in a completely different group around them and being higher, more highly talented? That's certainly possible. But expecting there to be enough potential for growth for an entire group of players to go from bottom to top, I don't think is realistic. And I think it's also worth mentioning that a lot of top players, generally, they do come into the league still talented, albeit maybe not everywhere. Now, here's an interesting one. What are some notable offensive role changes this year? And what I'm going to do to answer this question is, again, we're going to look at high minutes played guys. We're going to look at 1,000 minutes both last season and this season. If we were to change that around, we could probably get different lists. But for players who have played and are continuing to play a lot of minutes, there were 63 that saw an offensive role change. Again, these offensive roles, they're not based off of talent, the ones we're talking about today. They're not based off of anything other than how frequently a player is deployed into certain synergy play types. So pick and rolls or post-ups or isolation or spotting up, whatever. how many players saw big enough changes that they moved from one position to the other. That was 63. And of those 63 players, 29 of them actually played for a different team now than they did last season. So that makes sense. So about half of the players with a change are on a new team. The other half, approximately the other half, did not. And if you were to look at the percentage of the ones on the same team that just have a different coaching staff, I'm sure there's a decent chunk of them as well. So if we're going to, of those 63 players, I'm just going to look at the top 10 just in minutes played. There would be different ways to cut this and try to say these guys are more important, but not looking at impact, not looking at anything else. We're just going to look at minutes. The player who has played the most minutes this season, that also played at least 1,000 minutes last season, who has seen a role change, is the Phoenix Suns' Devin Booker. Now, Devin Booker has gone from being a primary creator to now being a secondary creator. This is not what Tony, Jacob, and I were talking about several months ago when we were talking about guys who might go from primary creators to mega creators, which is kind of a move in the opposite direction. When we talked about our offensive role ladders and kind of career pathing players up or down, left or right, this is a move for Devin Booker that's within the same position group. It's still a guard position, but instead of moving up the ladder with regard to the frequency at which you are isolating and using the pick and roll, he has instead moved in the opposite direction to being going from primary to secondary creator. Secondary creators, these are generally the guards who are, secondary pieces in the offense, ancillary pieces in the offense. They're not the ones you're relying upon to run a lot of pick and roll. They're not isolating a ton. They have a more diverse deployment. And in most cases, it's in an unfavorable type of way, in that if you're really talented, your skill set is probably better utilized as a primary creator, maybe even a mega creator. Or if you're like a LeBron James type or a Blake Griffin type or one of those guys, maybe a tall creator where you're doing some of the big man things, but you're also running a lot of ISO and some pick and roll. Booker took a step in the other direction. And along with that change, we can say that based off of his talent grades this season, we would project for him to have a lower impact offensively as a secondary creator than if he were to have stayed as a primary creator. Same skill set. So if he got a new coach today or changed teams or the coaching staff just decided to use him differently starting from today, we would expect him to rise in his offensive player impact plus minus if he were to be used as a primary creator. So that's an interesting one to me. Harrison Barnes also saw a role change. And Harrison Barnes, I was tweeting a week or so ago around the players who have seen the most offensive role changes in our database, which is only at this point, 7 years old? And Harrison Barnes was right up there. I think he's had six different positions in 7 years or five different roles in 7 years, something like that. This time around, he has gone from being a movement wing to a versatile big. So Harrison Barnes this year is being used like a big man, and not just a pick and pop big man or like a roll and cut big man. He's being used like a versatile big, which is more of the back to the basket, I'm going to post you up big guy, which is a position that we've seen decline league-wide in usage over the course of our database, and is an interesting one for Harrison Barnes to be used this year. And by interesting, I mean not ideal. Our data says this isn't a good change for him. Maybe it's a good change for the team, but that's unlikely in my eyes. So Harrison Barnes, another changer. Damian Lillard took a step up. He went from primary creator to mega creator. He is using more pick and roll. He's using more ISO this year. That type of position is more pick and roll, more ISO than it was as a primary creator. He's at the top of the ladder now. Mega creators are the James Hardens of the world, the guys who are dominating the ball among the guard position. Dame has joined that group, and our data says that it was a good change for him. Not a huge positive change, but it was a small step up in terms of how his skill set fits to that position. But along with making that rule change, the workload that comes along with that and the general impact that would a player would have as a mega creator is higher than as a primary creator. So even if he's around the same level of fit with that position, his impact would still be expected to be higher because of how much more responsibility it has on the table. DeMar DeRozan saw a change in the complete opposite direction. He went from mega creator to primary creator, and we see this as a very good step for him where his skill set is right now in terms of helping him be more impactful. So he took a step in the opposite direction. This is somebody who's getting a little bit older, but this primary creator role we feel, or I should say our data feels, better fits his skill set. Better fits his skill set, and that is based off of the random forest model machine learning that we did that looked at our database of players and their grades and compared that with impact values and tried to see what matters most for which types of roles. Buddy Hield, a player who I had spoken about at the beginning of the season as someone who has the potential to break out. We've certainly seen a fair share of great games from him. We've seen him benched, notably yesterday. He was on the bench. This is the three-point shooting champion, I should say, on the bench with a team down three with, 3 or 4 seconds left in the game. Buddy Hield, getting through that Luke Walton coaching. I would say that for him and others, it looks like as though it's been a struggle, but Walton does his thing. And going back to this, Buddy Hield has gone from a glue guy, which I would say is not his best role fit, but he has gone from glue guy to secondary creator, which isn't a great step forward. It's, in our data, a slight step back. Instead of Hield doing a little bit of everything, he's one of those secondary guard, in one of those secondary guard type roles. Whereas as a glue guy, you're doing a little bit of everything, but that seemed to fit Hield's skill set more, according to our data. Next up, we have Ben Simmons, and this is an exciting one for me to see on this list because I've been waiting for him to probably end up changing roles this year. And he has. He's gone from a versatile big last season to a tall creator this season, which our data is not a huge fan of. It thinks it's a step back for his skill set. However, it is a more impactful role in general. So his overall offensive impact, probably expect to be a little bit better. But that's an interesting one. That's a name I've been keeping an eye out for. We have two guys on here, Bradley Beal and TJ Warren, who both made changes this year. And in our data, they think it's about even. There's no real expected better or worse fit. Bradley Beal going from a secondary creator to a primary creator, which I like, I'm a fan of, and that's a role that carries more weight, is more impactful. And then TJ Warren from a spot-up wing to a secondary creator. So that might be the first, let's see, Devin Booker went from guard to guard, Barnes went from wing to big, Dame and DeRozan went from guard to guard, Buddy went from wing to guard, Simmons went from big to guard, and Beal went from guard to guard, TJ Warren went from wing to guard. So that is an interesting, almost a lateral move. He went from the bottom of the ladder among wings as a spot-up wing to the bottom of the ladder among guards as a secondary creator. We see this as a very much a lateral, even move for him. Jason Tatum took a step backward from a responsibility standpoint in terms of the play type usage from a tall creator who's at the top of the ladder, kind of in between the guards and the wings, back all the way down to a secondary creator. So he fell off the ladder. But he, according to our data, that is just a huge jump in his fit this season. I spoke earlier about how he was somebody, Ingram was another person who they had a couple holes in their profile that made me question how able they were to be superstars, at least last season. They've both seen some big jumps this year, but despite Tatum's big jump in one-on-one scoring, he is still a much better fit in our data as a secondary creator compared to a tall creator this year. So a better fit for him, it is a role that carries a little bit less weight within an offense. So some expected step back from an impact standpoint, but it is a much, much better fit for him. And then the 10th guy on our list, just again, 10th isn't bad. It's not good. It's just in minutes. Spencer Dinwiddie, we already talked about TJ Warren. Spencer Dinwiddie moved from a mega creator, took a step back to be a primary creator. In our data, that's a positive change for him. That's a better fit with his skill set. So this is something that you can take a look at within our grades and tools document. You can take a look and see who's moving where. I think it'd be interesting to look and see how like Monty Williams has changed the usage of the players on his team. Certain coaches like to use players certain ways, which is always interesting from a fit standpoint. I know this is something that we work with agents on is for your guy, what is the best situation for him in terms of how he might be used? That's one of the many components that we look at for an analysis like that. So you can see, oh yeah, you know what? This coach always likes to have one or two of these guys, or he's always wants to have a big man that's this type of the three different types. And if your guy doesn't fit that, maybe he's not a great fit with that system. So those are some of the uses for this. I think this is an interesting thing for fans and writers to look at to understand how, wow, this player's impact jumped a ton this year or dropped a ton this year. Was there a role change involved? Because we generally don't see massive drops or rises in talent or talent grades. A lot of times the change in impact just has to do with being in a better role or worse role, and then also from a scheme standpoint, better optimization, worse optimization. So that's a peek behind the curtain that you can also get with our $5 data tools package. Ever wonder why traditional button-ups look so long and baggy? That's because they were never meant to be worn that way. Untucked shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked. No matter your shape or size, their shirts are the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 fit combinations, untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Don't just take my word for it. Try untucked for yourself. Visit untucked.com and use code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the U.S. That's untucked.com and promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. Our last couple questions, and then we will get going. And then, I don't want to tease too much, but we have some exciting guests coming up for some of our next podcasts. But getting into question number 6 of 7, who is the best player in the talent database? And are they current or past player? So our best player in the entire database is 2019-2020 Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is a clear tier ahead in the data from a talent standpoint. He is a clear tier ahead in the player impact plus minus data from an impact standpoint. Despite what LeBron James did against two very good teams, probably two of the three best teams in the league this past week, Giannis has had the best season. He's been the one guy every month who's been in that MVP discussion, and we've seen who he's paired up against kind of change from, you know, Luka and James Harden and now LeBron. Giannis has always been that constant. And also, interestingly, we'll probably get into this next time, from a defensive player of the year standpoint, Giannis is also very, very much in that top tier for me, along with Rudy Gobert. I tweeted out a bunch of data comparing those two, and then also had Brooke Lopez and Anthony Davis in there. Looked at pretty much everything good that I could think to include from a defensive standpoint, from defending the interior, defending the perimeter, changing opponent's shot profiles, all kinds of different things. Giannis may be both the best player and the best defensive player this year. He hasn't been the most impactful offensive player, and he's not the most talented offensive player in our database, but overall, he's been the man. And then if we look at the final question, who has a chance to be the next best player in the database? I thought this was eye-opening for me. So I'm going through our stuff. and I filter to only look at players who are age 25 and under. And who do we see? Still Giannis. Still Giannis up there, which is just crazy to me. I think somebody who potentially could get to be that top guy might be Karl Anthony Towns, but his defense is really what would be holding him back. If he can somehow have just a revelation in his defensive performance, he has a chance. But I would say short and long term, we're in Giannis's world. Unless something crazy happens and he starts taking steps back or he gets injured or something, Giannis is the best player and probably will be the best player moving forward. And this is looking at what has happened. I think certainly in the playoffs, LeBron James can certainly turn it on and power the Lakers to the finals and the title. You can see crazy things from James Harden. There are a number of players who have the potential to, over a couple rounds, be the guy. But over the long, grueling season, I think it speaks to how dominant Giannis has been when we look at how good the Bucks have been and how he's been able to play, you know, hundreds of less minutes than players like LeBron or Anthony Davis and still have the highest aggregate impact from a wins added standpoint with our player impact plus minus metric. So that speaks to Giannis's dominance. Him being in the conversation for MVP pretty much every month of the year speaks to that consistency. And the Bucks as a team have been slipping a little bit, especially their offense, but we'll see what happens in the playoffs. And Giannis is still just a superstar, absolute superstar of superstars. I have questions about Milwaukee's coaching staff and their ability to adjust. I think that's been a weakness of Budenholzer staffs in Milwaukee and in other locations in the past. So that's something to keep an eye out for. I know last year, watching them play Toronto, I was ripping my hair out, screaming in the all caps, tweeting things out like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they're not adjusting to X, Y, and Z. Some of the things Toronto did defensively were things that you try for a couple of possessions and the other team probably adjusts and then you don't ever use it again. But they probed and Milwaukee never responded for games. Not a quarter, not a couple minutes, not a half. For games, seemingly, Milwaukee wasn't able to figure out how to beat Toronto's defenses, and Toronto had more than one thing in the bag. So that'll be something to keep an eye out for. It would be a shame for Milwaukee to go down. They do have the most talented roster, and I think they have the guns. If their guys show up, if Middleton shows up, if Bledsoe shows up, if they make shots, they have what they need to be dominant and win the title convincingly. But at the same time, if Giannis goes out early, it would be a shame if it's due to coaching things or some of those role players not being able to step up in big moments. So I'm riffing a little bit. If you can't tell, I'm excited about the playoffs. I am very excited about the playoffs in the West specifically. I think every single second round matchup will be a lot of fun. I think the Lakers or the Clippers have a really good chance to win that conference. But they're Houston can make a ton of noise. I think they have the potential to win the conference. I think Denver, I wouldn't have them in the top tier, but they're good. I think they'll push those teams, some more than others. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody or a team or two, but the playoffs are going to be a lot of fun. And it'll be interesting to see who matches up probably with the Bucks in the finals. We'll see if Toronto can give them a run for their money. That has been it for today. I'll stop before I just keep talking about the playoffs for the next 20 minutes. We still have a couple weeks left. We are close to March Madness. I would recommend that you check out the site. By the time this airs, maybe in another day, we will have our March Madness packages up and running. We have had a 99th percentile bracket two of the last 3 years. We've been selling our gambling picks against the spread round by round. And over the past two seasons, I'd have to double check the number. They were in the 67 or 68% range. Very, very high. This is my favorite time of year to watch games. It's my favorite time of year from a gambling standpoint. It's when all of the models are locked and loaded and ready to kick some butt. So very excited about that. If you don't want to have to learn, you know, 20 new college teams that you haven't seen play before this year. Go over to the site, buy our package. You can get the gambling picks if you want, or you can just buy the bracket. And either way, you will get our breakdown. Last year, I believe it was like 104 pages or something like that, previewing every single matchup, every round, some of the top upset picks to pick, all kinds of different things. We did very, very well last year. We'll look to keep it going this year. So check that out over this at the site in a day or two. You can always check out our $5 data and tools package. People have loved that, gotten some really good feedback there. If you're a current user of the package, keep an eye out for a survey we're going to send out trying to solicit more feedback, because it's the recommendations, questions, and suggestions from you, the listeners and the users, that has helped us push and figure out what the next new thing is that we're going to look at. We have a lot of really talented people who get the I've gotten the opportunity to work with, and we've gotten to work on some pretty cool things over at B-Ball Index, but there's always more that we can take a look at, and those recommendations and suggestions, questions from you help us to figure out how we can better organize things or add new features or different things like that. Just like with our leaderboards, I'm gonna go talk to Jacob right after this and make sure we set up being able to filter by positions as well. So little things like that, we can make your experience as a user much, much easier. So check out our $5 data and tools package. You've got all kinds of stuff in there. You've got our gravity apps, or talent grades, optimization, all those different things. Actually, I believe we held optimization, because some of our stuff is becoming even more premium than premium as we get more into consulting. But all the grades are still in there. All of the gravity stuff, the PIPM, the luck adjusted data, all of that. We have WNBA data, college data, international leagues. We have several dozen leagues, G League, all kinds of stuff. So check that out. And I will let you go. I've got another like 5 minutes riffing. This has been the B-Ball Index podcast. I'm Cranges McBasketball. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim_NBA. You can follow the site at V_B-Ball_Index, or just look up B-Ball Index. Follow Jacob. What is his handle? It's like Jacob E. Goldstein, I believe. Just Google Jacob Goldstein. He'll pop up. Go over, check out the site. Keep up to date with the articles that we're pumping out. And let's have a fun final couple weeks of the season. I'm excited. Let's go, guys. Today's episode has been brought to you through the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you to our sponsors, Bet Online and also Nantucket. And I've been Tim.